Welcome to another podcast by Air Insight.
Today is April the 22nd. This is Addison Schoenland, and my guest today is Roy Ganzarski, who is the CEO of Magnix. And this is a company that is in the electrical propulsion technology business. And Magnix is poised to disrupt the aerospace and defense industry with its advanced electric engines that will enable transportation capabilities and services never possible before. Roy, that's a really interesting statement that I see on the site here. Please, can you give our listeners a sense of what Magnix is about?
Yeah, thank you, and good morning. Magnix is really about connecting communities like never before. If you look historically at what happened when rail arrived at cities, there was an economic boom, and suddenly both people and cargo could start getting transported from place to place. The same thing happened when major airline hubs opened up at cities. What we're trying to do is do the same thing for the next level, basically medium and smaller sized cities, including rural areas. Now, that's never been possible before because airlines have figured out that the bigger the aircraft, the more the money they make. In fact, if you look at 2005, 50% of airline flights here in the United States were done by aircraft of 50 passengers or smaller. In 2018, that number dropped to 20% of flights only, which means airlines are going to larger and larger aircraft. Well, if you can imagine that they have to fill 70-80% of those aircraft in order to make money, they can't go to smaller or medium-sized airports because they won't fill those seats. They go to larger airports. That's why when you look across the United States and you see that there's around 10,000, in fact, a little over 10,000 airports that are available to fly in and out of, airlines only use about 600 of them. If you add some more of the smaller airlines, private aviation, et cetera, you're at about 2,000, which still leaves 8,000 airports across the U.S. that aren't being used to transfer people and goods on a commercial basis. And that's a shame because there's a lot of prospects there to be done. So what Magnix is doing is it's creating an electric propulsion system that you can either convert aircraft with or design new aircraft around that will enable operations to be at 60 to 80% lower per flight hour compared to conventional aircraft. What that means is if that once it was too expensive to operate a 100-mile flight or a 300-mile flight or a 500-mile flight, unless it was between large hubs with large aircraft, that will change that paradigm on its head, which means that new companies will be able to set up operations between these cities and allow the movement of both people and goods in a way that's never been done before. That means that maybe the idea of what does a suburb mean changes from a 1 hour drive as a commute to maybe a 30, 40 minute flight as a commute, where you can live in a lower cost, higher quality of life area than in a downtown area or a large city, and then fly into work because the cost of flying will be just like taking a train or riding a truck. The nice thing is that as opposed to high-speed rail, which requires significant infrastructure investments and requires physical infrastructure between the two points or multiple points that you want the rail to go, we already have all that infrastructure existing today. It's just about utilizing it.
That is disruptiveness, that's for sure. So the electrical motor that Magnix, and forgive me for not saying it right the first time, tell me about the electrical motor and what it is that you guys are going to do that's so revolutionary with this motor.
The electric propulsion system has two parts to it. One is the motor, as you mentioned. The other is the power electronics, and I'll talk about both. And they are truly both radical and revolutionary in what they're able to do and why we're at this point today. The motor is very lightweight, very small, very powerful, and turns at a low speed. What does that mean? If you take our larger motor, the Magni 500, that motor weighs about 240 pounds, produces 750 horsepower, but only turns at 1,900 RPM. What does that mean? If you take the equivalent turbine engine, the most prevalent of which is the Pratt & Whitney PT6, produces also 750 horsepower, but weighs double, if not more. That's one. and two, turns at tens of thousands of revolutions per minute, which means on top of the size and weight of the PT6 engine, you also have to add a gearbox. And the gearbox, of course, adds more weight, more complexity, more maintenance issues, more oil, etc. The nice thing about having our motor turn at only 1,900 RPM is that that's the speed in which the propellers turn on many of these middle-mild aircraft. So you can go direct motor to propeller and completely get rid of the element of the gearbox. So there's a few elements like that in our motor. For example, integrated cooling system. When you're looking at very small electric motors, while they produce heat, they're small enough to be cooled by the air, so air cooled. When you're looking at the size of motor that we're dealing with, the 750 horsepower, even the 375 horsepower, and doing it for commercial aviation, which means we'll be flying at higher altitudes, 10, 15, 25,000 feet, you cannot rely on air cooling. It's not enough. You have to have liquid cooling. But if you add the traditional way of liquid cooling an engine, which many engines are liquid cooled today, you add so much weight that the whole notion of power to weight ratio that's really great on our motor disappears. So we've been able to develop a proprietary system that has an integrated liquid cooling system that allows the motor to be cooled well enough to have full performance at all altitudes, but also doesn't add a significant weight penalty. So that's another element of it. The power electronics, the inverters, the controllers, etc., that enable that motor to do what it needs to do, right now, there are no aerospace-grade power electronics that can work at the power levels that we require for commercial aviation. So we're developing that on our own as well, and we're able to do things, again, from a power and weight and liquid cooling element that has never been done before, and thus aviation was never going to all electric. Now that that entire propulsion system is in place and ready to go, that's why we can do things like Harbor Air converting them to all electric, or the Eviation Alice, an all-electric aircraft by design.
So I'm hearing you talk about the weight, and that intrigues me, because if we say the PT6 as an example, yes, it has a weight, and there's the fuel weight that goes with that to generate the payload that it does. When you compare then your electric motor, the 750 horsepower, plus the battery weight, how do those, when you sort of even that up, the power source and the power output, how does that even out?
That's a really good question. So if you look at, first of all, we separate between the power source and the power use, if you will. The PT6, in addition to the entire cooling system that's around it and the gearbox, et cetera, is about three times the weight of the Magni X propulsion solution, meaning the motor, the inverters, et cetera. It's also about three times the size of the Magni X solution. So you have that as an aside. In terms of the source, when you're looking at converting an aircraft like the Harbor Air Beaver to an all-electric, what we're doing is simply taking the weight of the fuel and replacing it with the weight of batteries. So if we were trying to get to the same range as a Beaver can do on a full tank of gas, clearly we wouldn't be able to do that if we filled the entire aircraft with batteries, because the power density of fuel is significantly larger than that of batteries. So what we're doing is we're saying, let's keep the aircraft the same from a weight perspective, meaning let's just replace the weight of fuel in the fuel tanks with the weight of batteries. Now, that, of course, then results in shorter range. Instead of having a 600-800 mile range on a single tank of gas, you only get 100 to 130 miles range plus reserve on a single set of batteries. So that means, of course, you're limiting the range. That's why when you ask the question of range, it's really not about how far can an electric aircraft go, and is it as good as a gas engine? It's really about, is the distance that the electric aircraft can do good enough for specific operators in a niche market? The answer to that is yes. If you look at 2018, there were about 38 million airline flights worldwide. 5% of those flights, 1.8 million flights worldwide, were 100 miles or less for commercial airlines. I'm not talking about cargo or charter or private. Commercial scheduled airlines, 5% of worldwide flights were less than 100 miles. So clearly there are multiple operators, like Harbor Air being the launch of those, that operate in a very short distance. And so the electric aircraft, the converted electric aircraft, with today's range, fits their needs. So from that perspective, there's no difference. If you look at an aircraft like the Eviation Alice that we're now propelling, that aircraft that was built to be electric can take a lot more batteries. Instead of about 1 ton of batteries, which will be on the Beaver, the Aviation Alice will have over 3 tons of batteries. That aircraft will be able to take the same 9 people, but 650 miles in range, which is a phenomenal, phenomenal range for an aircraft, because going back to that same statistic, out of 38 million flights that were done last year by airlines, 45% were 500 miles or less. So the Alice can address half of the market that was required.
That is impressive. Of course, I can't help myself now. You know, you're sparking all the, pardon the pun, sparking all these ideas. How long does it take to recharge? Let's say you fly the 130 miles worth of reserves, but let's say you take the Beaver, you fly 130 miles, now you land. Do you have to recharge before you take off again, and how long does that take?
Really good question. Right now, the charging, thanks to companies like Tesla and the electric automobile industry, charging right now is at about a 1-to-1 ratio, which means for 1 hour of flight, you can charge for 1 hour and continue on. But more importantly, if you're on a flight like the Harbor Air flights, which are on average 20, 25 minutes, that means 20 to 25 minutes of charge, which is exactly how they operate. They will fly 15 to 25 minutes on average, land at the harbor, and then take about 20 to 30 minutes on the ground, or, you know, on the water, pun intended, and then continue on. So from that perspective, the reason an operator like Harbor Air is perfect to launch the electric aviation revolution is we don't have to change anything about their operation, their scheduling, their sequencing in order to go all electric. It fits perfectly into the model.
Yeah, that certainly sounds like a very good fit. Now, battery technology is changing. So where do you expect battery technology to move over the next 5 years in terms of weight, capacity, rechargeability? And how will that impact your aviation plans?
Yeah, really good question. The question of batteries is, of course, the big one, right? That's the elephant in the room. Are there enough batteries, or is batteries power dense enough to do aviation? And again, the question is, how do you frame the question? We're not claiming to be able to fly all electric from Seattle to New York nonstop, or definitely not New York to London, not at least for quite some years. But what we expect to happen in the next 5 years are two things. One, the traditional, quote-unquote, lithium-ion batteries, which are used today, will continue to improve as they have improved in the past. It's a small improvement. They're improving 5 to 7% a year, but still that improves. So we expect that while today we can do a 100-mile flight, in 5 years we should be able to do something like a 180, 200-mile flight. So that's with the same weight of batteries. That's one thing that's happening if we only rely on lithium ion. But the second thing that's happening is that new battery technologies are coming up, aluminium-based, sulfur-based, solid-state, solid air, et cetera, which at least now at the research phase are showing things like 4, 5, 800 watt-hours per kilogram as opposed to the 200, 230 that you can get today out of lithium ion. And so if these technologies indeed pan out to be viable for aerospace, you're looking at 5 years from now maybe being able to fly on that same converted aircraft instead of 100 miles, 5 or 800 miles, which is significant. If you take that to the Aviation Alice as an example, that with today's batteries can take 9 people 650 miles, that means that 5 years from now, maybe they can do 1,500 miles, which again is a significant, significant win for electric aviation. So those are the things that we expect to see in batteries. I will say a second point, which we've seen from electric cars. Before Tesla came around and said electric cars is a real thing, no companies invested in car batteries because beyond that 12-volt battery you needed by your motor, by your engine, you really didn't need anything else. So why invest? And Tesla heard the same naysayers say 6, 7 years ago, there's not enough batteries for range. So they started with a niche market, their Sportster car that took 2 people, you know, 80, 100 miles. And here we are today with family vehicles going over 400 miles. We expect the same thing to happen in aviation. Right now, the naysayers are saying, there's not enough power-dense batteries for aviation. Well, first, that's wrong because there is for short-range aviation. We've already shown that, and we're going to be flying that this November. But the second thing is, once companies like ours, and there's at least one other company that's doing commercial-sized motors, and that's Siemens. I am proud to say Siemens and us are in the same market space. Once we start flying these aircraft, the battery companies will see that this is real and start the continued and perhaps even aggressive investment into battery technology specifically for aerospace. So that could improve even more than it is today.
Okay, so next question about, I guess this is a little bit, you're not in the battery business, but it does obviously, as a source, it does impact your product. Batteries don't like cold weather, so battery life is going to go down in cold weather, and harbor air is flying in cold weather. And by the way, what happens when you're flying along and the battery decides to go on the fritz? Now what happens? Do you have redundancy?
Yeah, no, really good question. So first of all, when it comes to redundancy, secondary systems, backups, it's no different than fuel. What happens if your fuel pump decides to go on the fritz? So from that perspective, there are regulatory requirements that we will have to go through, no different than any other traditional fuel-based, turbine-based engine aircraft has to go through. We'll have to prove that our system is as reliable and as safe, if not more so, than any traditional aircraft flying out there today. So from that perspective, redundancies, fail-safes, backups, etc., are all going to be part of the requirement that we expect to have to show. To that end, for example, if you look at our motor, our 750 horsepower motor is in fact built out of four independently controlled and run mini motors, if you will, inside to simplify it. That means that if, let's say, you have a bad day and there's a short circuit or some sort of malfunction, our system can turn off one of those segments, allowing the pilot 75% power to continue flying safely and finding a great landing spot. Let's say it's a really bad day and another fault happens. You can shut down another element and still have 50% power. Compare that to a traditional turbine engine or internal combustion engine. When there's a fault, it's an all or nothing. The entire engine shuts down and you have to glide to safety. So clearly electric motors allow you to do things that could physically be done in traditional internal combustion. But from an overall safety and reliability, again, we're going to have to, by the time a passenger gets on that aircraft or cargo is flown on it, we'll have to have passed every single requirement, old and or new, that the regulatory body requires to prove reliability and safety.
Okay, my last question. How quiet do you expect a Beaver? Look, a Beaver is a noisy airplane with a radial engine. If you're an av geek, you love the noise, but maybe people don't living in the neighborhood of the airport don't care for it too much. What is the difference in noise level going to be between a radial engine Beaver, a turbo Beaver, and then the electric Beaver?
Yeah, there's a few elements that comprise noise. One is the engine itself, and then the other is the propeller, pushing basically air and creating noise. The propeller, we're not changing. The propeller is going to be the same traditional propeller, and so the noise from the propeller will be the same noise. But the engine will go to a motor, which means from a very noisy radial or even a noisy turbo Beaver, which is a PT6, from that going to a zero noise, completely zero electric motor, you're probably looking at about half the noise levels, both inside the cabin and outside. Remember, it's not just the neighbors you mentioned that are outside the aircraft at the airport. It's also the passengers inside the aircraft. I've flown the Beaver and the Caravan and the Otter quite a few times, both with Harbor and other airlines that fly these small aircraft. And inside, it's quite noisy, both from the propeller and the engine. The engine noise going to an electric motor will go to zero. That's one. Two, a contributing factor to the comfort of the flight is also the vibrations. An electric motor, by definition, is significantly less vibratory than a traditional internal combustion or radial engine is. So the aircraft will vibrate more. You'll have a smoother flight in the aircraft as a passenger. Because remember, as opposed to on a 737 or a 777, you're in this 9, 8, 12, 15-passenger aircraft. You're close to everything. So every element of that vibration is critical to the comfort of your flying. And so a lot less vibration. The third thing that will be noticed very significantly are smells. When you're flying in a Beaver or a Caravan or an Otter, you can smell the fuel. You can smell the emissions, whether you're on the ground approaching the aircraft, whether you're taxiing, you're taking off or flying. Those smells are predominantly there. And the emissions that are created are there. When you fly in an all-electric aircraft, guess what? Zero smell, zero emissions, because there are no fuels or oils to be used. So the overall experience will be significantly more comfortable for a passenger flying on Harbor Air on an all-electric aircraft.
That's an amazing story. Roy, thank you so much for the call.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
This recording is copyrighted by Air Insight.